hope that some of you have enjoyed your various NGC and constituency period. Now we are fresh with fresh political mandate, that means we can have on tackle issues. My name is Humphrey Matun Mokhori, the chairperson of the committee, and I would also allow members to introduce themselves.
My name is Jack Becker. I'm from the Eastern Cape. I'm a member of this committee.
Yes, my name is John Gunda. I'm a member of this committee. I'm from the Northern Cape, but I represent South Africa.
My name is Chatham. I'm a member of the committee from the Free State.
Bonnie Slane is a member of the committee. I'm from you guys, from the UK.
Where are you from, Sandin River Valley or Kukam? Let me give you the ropes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Taloko Bano, responsible for local government. I'm accompanied by the Deputy Director General, Mzimas Mangojo, to my right. And Fuyo Zatumane, the administrator of Sandes River, and Mr. Tumane, the administrator of Kogama, and the PLO, parliamentary liaison officer in the Department of Local Government. We wish to apologize for the absence of the HOD due to the EXCO outreach in Nelson Mandela Metro to attend to matters that affect the department. So we had to split to come here because we requested the committee to postpone again due to government commitments. So we profusely apologize for his absence. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we accept apology even on our side. We need to share ourselves. One member is in Britain, the other members are in other committees, and we had to share ourselves also. Thank you very much. Then I would allow the Honorable MEC to lead.
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Members. We have been asked to come and update this August committee on the three municipalities that we invoked Section 139. Alfred Nzo District Municipality, Sandes River Valley Municipality, and Kokama. I think we are doing very fairly well in relation to trying to take those municipalities out of the crisis we found them in, and that they were engulfed. And in relation to Alfred Nzo, we have even developed, I think the Honorable Committee will recall, we even developed the final report, because we have now pulled out of that municipality in realizing that we have stabilized all its administrative systems, and therefore politically as well that municipality now is stable. All vacancies that were critical at the time unfilled are now filled, so the municipality is now on its own. However, we have put some mechanism to monitor and support that municipality. I think the details, the DDG will deal with that. Now with Sandes River, you will recall that it also captured the public and the national focus due to the violence and protests that were engulfing that municipality. And there was both political and administrative instability in that municipality. I think the honorable members will recall when we briefed them. And as we speak now, politically there is stability. Council meetings are proceeding very well, strategizing and now dealing with the key issues and the core businesses of that municipality providing services. But of course the administrator would take the committee through in detail in terms of some of the achievement and the remaining challenges. We have taken a view, Honorable Chair, that looking at the period remaining towards March next year, where the mandate of the existing municipalities is going to end, we had to take a decision as to whether, in view of the fact that even the issue of trying to fill the municipal manager post is also going to consume some time due to advertisement, interviewing, and so on. And also taking into account that even people who would have been interested in applying, looking at the period from now to March, nobody will be available to take such a shorter period, a post with a shorter period. So we examined everything in the department and have persuaded EXCO to extend the period of the administrator until a new council is able to appoint a new municipal manager. So EXCO has agreed that is the best approach, but with other positions, let's see if people would be interested to be a Section 57 manager for 5 months or so. Equally, in Kokama, even though there are challenges, some of them are now emerging now that we are there, because at the time they were hidden, and now that we are there, some of the challenges are getting up. But in terms of stabilizing, at least we have managed to achieve some stability, but I think the challenges are in the administration area. Mr. Tubane is going to take the committee into confidence in terms of briefing it, what are the issues in that municipality. They have just appointed an MM for a period of 2 years or so. We then said we are currently discussing in the department whether, as a consequence of that move, we must then consider pulling out. And the view that is within the department is that it would be dangerous to do that, judging by the way the workers, the attitude of the workers is in that municipality. And the new MM would find it difficult to proceed, even though he's familiar with the area. So it would be difficult to leave him alone in that area. We rather allow the administrator some more time to strengthen the hand of the MM and to familiarize the MM with the environment and the challenges remaining, so that as we shall then at a particular stage pull out, at least he would be conversant of the issues that are going on there. I must also say, Chair, before I hand over to the DDG and the administrators, during our intervention, Sandes River and Kokama, including Afrenzo, we commissioned the SIU to investigate certain instances. I think they finalized those reports. I think we will have to come back to the committee and share with the committee those forensic reports. They are not good, I must say. Their findings are more on the conduct of councillors. For instance, in the case of Alfonso, their salary adjustment, they've just adjusted their salaries in a manner that is not procedurally correct. But the SIU, given its mandate, it's now trying to recover that money from those councillors. Secondly, I think Alfonso was characterized by a lot of corruption, selling of municipal diesel and so on, abuse of municipal cars and so on. All those people have been arrested. Now, equally, in Sandes River, the councillors is the issue of business interests. We have discovered that many of those councillors were taking decisions that benefit their contractors, preside over a tender, and only to find that the tender goes to one of them, one of their contractors, without declaring anything. And we have further discovered that the money that was meant for workers, farm workers, was used by one of the councillors without giving those farm workers their money. So those are the matters that have been picked up by the forensic audit. In Okama, even there, I think the CFO was very responsible there. I think an amount of 1.5 million was missing. And the commercial branch of the police is handling that case because we had had to refer it to the commercial branch of the police to deal with that. We have had to refer to the Hawks in some of the cases. So they keep us briefing in terms of at what stage is a particular case. Is equally there, councillors have just adjusted their remuneration and so on and so on. And those matters are now being handled by both the police as well as the SIU. So that is the extent to which we have now moved in terms of bringing the normality to those municipalities. But I will allow, with your permission, Honorable Chair, the DDG to take you through the report, or administrator from Sandes River, the first one to take the committee through. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can take us.
Good day, everyone. Honorable members and the chair. I'll take you through the progress report on areas that have been achieved in the last 6 months since the intervention. This is the framework of the report, but I'm not going to go through it. Section 139B was enacted on the 18th of February this year, which is exactly 8 months ago. And the areas of intervention were on finance, human resources, infrastructure and service delivery, legal and governance, including public participation. On assumption of my duties, we had to do a detailed assessment of what were the key issues that were prevailing in the municipality at that point in time. And that assessment was then converted into a turnaround strategy and a plan with clear milestones on what needs to be achieved, with clear roles and responsibilities as various government departments, including Gazladu District Municipality, had a role to play. That plan was adopted by Council on the 25th of March. Subsequently, there was a capacity assessment of various municipalities, and it did not yield any different results from the assessment which was done. It was a matter of just updating the turnaround plan which was in existence at the time. And prior to the intervention, there was also an intervention by the provincial treasurer as well as local government, where they developed a financial recovery plan which was never implemented at the time. And it was subsequently integrated into the turnaround plan. Now, what I will be outlining there as a problem statement is the status quo at the time of intervention. There is a culture, generally, within Sandes River of non-payment for services, obviously for various reasons. the debt book at the time stood at 55 million, and on analysis, 30% of that 55 million is indigent, which means that it might not be recoverable. Collection rate was at 30%. One of the biggest problems that we had as an institution was around tariff setting. In fact, at the time of intervention, we were subsidizing consumers. We were charging consumers far less than what we were buying electricity for from Eskom. In fact, if I can give you specifics, we bought each unit of electricity for 18 cents, and we charged consumers 9 cents, which means that the municipality has been running at a loss, I don't know for how long, but that had affected the financial status of the institution. Secondly, we never considered the cost of providing that service. It was a matter of just doing a benchmark exercise whether it really made us to float above the water or something else. Also, we had a problem when it comes to financial management capacity at two levels in terms of warm bodies. We had one credit control officer with a debt book of 55 million. That person is supposed to consolidate meter readings, the billing system, and follow up on people who are not paying. So that was the biggest problem that we had at the time. Second aspect around capacity was the required competencies in terms of financial management. Both were lacking. The other aspect was that we had a serious problem when it comes to accounting records. As the MEC alluded earlier on, there have been a number of investigations at Sandys River, and documents are working. They have been working. Some of them are with the SIU, some of them are missing. And the effect of that is that the validity of your accounting records can never be accurate. Again, we had a credit control and debt management policy and various bylaws, but they were never implemented. On occasions where they were implemented, there was always a political intervention or interference. Also, if you look at the number of indigents that we have vis-a-vis what is the actual reality on the ground, there's a big disparity. Now, the effect of that is that we're getting less from the equitable share due to the, I would say, misstatement of what we have on the system. Structure, there are a number of positions, about 39 positions out of 211 were vacant, and unfortunately we could not fill them because of the financial crisis. Then again, one of the biggest problems that we had, which has contributed to the disclaimer that we've had for the past 5 years or so, was the lack of competencies to operate our financial management system, as well as the fact that many people, because of the lack of capacity, they could not use it to its optimal level. Again, we didn't have financial policies, including simple things like delegations. They were just non-existent. The most important aspect which the MEC has alluded to is complete disregard of procurement policies, both at a political and administrative level. I mean, there are a number of tenders when I had to come in, I had to make a choice whether to continue with those tenders or cancel them and rather pay damages, and I opted for the latter, obviously. The budget has never been credible. People continue to spend based on what is on paper, not on what is at the bank. In fact, when I assumed the intervention on the day of my introduction, there was 54 rands in the bank, and I had to pay salaries of 2 million the next day. No proper budget and monitoring control. So this is the situation which was prevailing at the time. Now, what have we done since then? We had to review our credit control policy to make sure that it is stringent and it's going to give us leverage to collect what is due to us. And it was subsequently adopted by the Council on the 25th of March. Despite the fact that we are aware that there's a financial crisis, we had to balance whether we should continue with the capacity that is not existent in finance, or we take a bold decision and appoint people with the hope that once your finance department is stable, we'll be able to collect more. So we decided to review the structure and make sure that there are certain critical positions that are filled within finance. There was a situation where you had people that are dealing with income, they were dealing with expenditure at the same time, hence many of the audit queries which continue to recur. So we approved 13 new positions, and so far we've filled in 10, and we are struggling to get 3. I must indicate and say that it's very difficult to attract capacity at Sandy's River, precisely because of the poor image that has been prevailing within the institution, and the fact that there's a lot of, there has been a lot of negative publicity. So it's very difficult. In fact, we were supposed to fill in those positions in August, and we only filled them in October precisely because of those reasons. Stringent financial management policies were approved by the council in May. We had to develop a delegations manual, which was approved. The budget was adjusted in March when we realized that the budget was only credible on paper, but in reality it was something else. We, for the first time in many years, we approved the draft IDP and the budget, and we made sure that it's synchronized as per the Treasury regulations, and subsequently finally approved on the 31st of May. And we had to review tariffs. That has not made many consumers happy. We still have some disputes, particularly with your bulk users, but we had to cut the bullet and take hard decisions. Obviously, we had to look at cost-cutting measures, telephone cards, 3G cards. There were situations where managers at finance, their monthly bill on 3G cards was around 10,000, but we had to deal with them, and we had to review our ICT policy as well. Now, the data status, as to date, if you remember when I said when we took over, it stood at 55 million. It has increased to 66 million. That doesn't mean that we are not collecting what is due to us. But one of the problems that we had at the time, there was no reconciliation between the billing system and the people who were consuming services. There were a number of consumers who continued to consume those services but never billed them. Now we've done a reconciliation and discovered that there are a number of debtors that are owing us money, hence there is a significant increase. Also, we have been on an aggressive drive to register indigents, hoping that in the next financial year we'll be able to motivate for a bigger share of the equitable share. And also, there was a once-off annual charge for rates for this current financial year, hence the significant increase. I must indicate that we had to be innovative in ensuring that we improve the revenue inflow. We introduced what is called a new incentive scheme, where if people pay their debt within a certain period, we offer some discounts. And I must say that consumers have responded positively. And also, we are very aggressive when it comes to disconnections. Every week, we disconnect and people are coming in to pay.
Sorry, Chair.
The update is only two slides that are not in your pack. It's
okay.
Only this one and the next one. I'm sorry about that. I should have indicated that. Yeah. So in terms of debtors management, we are doing very well. However, there's a problem which is reflected in the next slide. We have a number of creditors. Honorable MPLs, we are aware that the intervention was you'll be aware that part of the reason why there was an intervention is because of the corruption that's prevailing in the municipality. There's a lot of money that is missing. There's a lot of money that was supposed to be paid to legitimate contractors who have subsequently been, converted to creditors who are not very happy with the municipality for two reasons. Money stolen. Number two, money used for operating expenses. Now, we have a number of creditors that are taking us to court, and et cetera, et cetera. Now, as at end of September, our trade creditors stood at $35,664,000. However, due to the positive revenue inflow, we've been able to pay about $4.4 million TAFA, which means they've been reduced. I will not talk about current invoices because they are not critical for this presentation. But the AG is one of the major creditors. We owe them about $1.2 million, but we have made payment arrangements which we are honoring. So that figure is reducing. The other trade creditor is ESCOM. I must indicate that the department as well had to intervene and assisted us with about close to $2 million to pay the long outstanding account of ESCOM. So currently it's standing at 400,000. Those are our priority creditors, because if we don't pay ESCOM, they are going to cut and consumers will not pay. But in that 35 million, I must indicate that Department of Water Affairs is owed about 10 million. They gave us money for a bulk water supply project. It was used for operating expenses before the intervention. So we have an obligation to pay back that amount. About 20 million of that is contractors who are supposed to be paid, who are creditors. And I must indicate, because I did stress this to the chairperson the last time you visited us, that 20 million is not going to be found anywhere. No matter how robust we are in terms of implementing credit control policies, what we are bringing in for this current financial year is for current obligations. Now you have 35 million, which is coming from outer years, which is putting a lot of pressure in this current financial year. And I must stress and say, no matter how much you can intervene, no matter how much technical support you can provide, if we cannot deal with the long outstanding obligations on amounts that we all know that it's unlikely that we're going to recover them, the intervention will be useless. I've raised this issue before, and I continue to raise it, because that money is stolen. We don't know how long the investigations are going to be completed. Even if they are completed, the probability of recovering that amount, nobody knows it. And yet we have creditors that are paying interest, penalties, legal fees, and so on. And I really want to stress that. In terms of salary expenditure, we are paying that. Even statutory obligations, which were outstanding for quite some time, have been covered in this current financial year. But my biggest problem and frustration is that 35 million that somebody must assist me and deal with. Now, on institutional development, at the time the structure was not aligned to the IDP. There were goals which we didn't even have a clue as to how and why they were created. And as I indicated earlier on, there was a high vacancy rate. And also on very competent staff, they left the institution because of the instability. But I think that is history. Also, we have a problem at infrastructure. We don't have a qualified engineer. No, a technician. The person that is acting as we speak is a qualified artisan that is experienced but with no proper training. The person is responsible for water and sanitation, is responsible for electricity, is responsible for roads. And you don't even have specialists in these three different areas that I've indicated. You have a housing department that was managing an annual budget of 100 million with only two people in that department. So in as far as infrastructure is concerned, finance has been sorted out, but infrastructure continues to be a challenge. The local labor forum was non-functional. There was no training at all, despite a skills development plan, which was there. HR policies were outdated. The performance management system was there, but all Section 57 managers had not been assessed in the last financial year. And as I said, delegations and policies were outdated and in contrary with the current, with the various pieces of legislation. Now, what have we done? We have reviewed the structure. We've only reviewed finance. Unfortunately, we don't have a budget for now. We've been promised by SACA to do the whole organizational review. 10 out of 13 positions at finance have been filled in, and there is some ease of pressure. Also, DBSA has intervened. They've given us two people, one technical support and one financial specialist. And they cautioned us when they deployed those specialists to say those people are there purely on an advisory basis. But because of the challenges that we have in terms of home bodies, they are implementing policies. We have no option. So we're doing what is contrary to DBSA requirements. Also, the department has deployed a number of specialists in HR, finance, as well, and internal audit to provide us with support. Qatar also is on board in terms of policy review and development. Roles and responsibility manual has been developed. One of the critical problems is that administrators did not know what their role is, in the same way as politicians never knew what their role is. They would interfere in each other's terrain. Rules of order were developed, thoroughly workshopped, and approved, because one of the problems was that councillors, before the intervention, took many resolutions which are irregular precisely because they did not follow the rules of order. Draft delegations also were workshopped and approved, and as the MEC said, politically and administratively, including the constituencies, there is a lot of stability that is prevailing. There is some confidence that is being instilled in the institution. Also, we have an HR plan in place. The performance management policy and system has been approved by the council. Section 57 managers have been assessed in the first quarter, and we're cascading it to line managers as well, but we want to cascade it to the entire institution. Local labor forum is sitting. They've had more than 5 meetings to date, and service delivery, which is critical now, is at the core council agenda. On service delivery, this is one challenge that we have. We are not maintaining infrastructure because we don't have enough operations and maintenance budget. Last year there was NIM, this year it's 4 million, but if you look at the status of infrastructure, it requires more than 4 million, and we all know the effects of not maintaining infrastructure. Street lights also are a problem. You get ratepayers complaining on a daily basis. Internal roads are not maintained. What an electricity cut on a when it rains on Sandys River, we know that there's electricity is going to be cut off. We don't even have an infrastructure maintenance plan, and as I said earlier on, that staff and competences at infrastructure are not there. Housing development challenges. I must say, with the intervention of the department and pressure that has been exerted on Department of Human Settlements, all projects which have been blocked have been unblocked, and two projects in which we cancelled the tenders have been re-advertised, and contractors, one contractor is on site and the other one, they are dealing with pre-planning issues. This was a serious problem. Would go to communities and talk about service delivery improvement, but the issue would be housing. And I must say that in the last month, the Department of Human Settlements, because of the pressure that they've been getting from the department, have responded positively. But we are no longer assuming a role of being a developer as Sandys River because we don't have the capacity. Our role will be purely on social facilitation and project management, but the department is going to be responsible for the full implementation. Well, corruption and everything else started at housing, and we're saying until our house is in order and we have people, we can reassume the developer status. Service delivery, the financial payout, once more, Chairperson, is critical. As I said, we need at least 20 million to float above the water. In fact, more, but we're begging just for 20 million for us to do basic, what is basic. And also, we are no longer utilizing grant funding. We've ring-fenced.
Why don't you walk like Jesus Christ on the ocean?
All right. On service delivery, one of the considerations that we're taking as a council is that we need to be humble about our weaknesses. If it means we need to outsource water and sanitation to Amatola Water Board, let's do that. Because we don't have the capacity to render the function. We have started some discussions with Amatola Water Board. They seem to be willing to take over the function. Also on electricity, Chair, we're exploring, but I don't know now with the instability that is within the metro. We've had some discussions at the metro that perhaps they can even assist us on managing electricity infrastructure because we don't have people to manage that. We have funds that we have sought from MIG to develop an infrastructure maintenance plan, but in the next financial year. As I said, we've increased our operations and maintenance budget to 4 million, which is inadequate, of course. But also, we have developed a 100-day service delivery implementation plan, which started on the 1st of October, just to look at quick wins and basic maintenance issues, which was well received by the community. We're fixing street lights, potholes, staff minor repairs to indicate our commitment to service delivery. And I must say, it has yielded very good results, both from the Ratepayers Association as well as the respective ones within Sandy's Reef. On governance, Chair, there was no communication at all with the communities. I remember our first public engagement, we were kicked out. But now, on a quarterly basis, we go back to the constituencies to talk about service delivery related issues and any other matters that are relevant at that point in time. Procurement policy is watertight. Councillors know that they are not supposed to be involved. They try, but we always ask them to back off. We've had disclaimers for successive years, and I must say, whilst I'm not optimistic that we can get an unqualified report, but I'm sure in this current financial year, we'll have a qualification. But with all the systems in place that we have, we might go to an unqualified report in the next. I think we have the culture, the policies that we have, we've even developed internal audit steering committees, and even the key performance area, I mean performance agreements of Section 57 managers. Issues of risk management and internal controls are an integral part. We don't have an internal audit function. We have one on a shared basis, but the department is also beefing us up in terms of capacity and warm bodies to provide assistance in that regard. As I said, there's a public participation policy which has been approved. We are meeting with communities on a quarterly basis, and the environment has improved. Council meetings are taking a place. We've had three audit committee meetings, five internal audit steering committees, an internal audit plan, and a comprehensive checklist has been developed, and managers are reporting on a monthly basis as what are they doing about that checklist. Hence, I'm saying if we continue with the trend, we'll be able to get an unqualified report. An anti-corruption and fraud policy was workshopped with councillors and approved investigations. The MEC has spoken about that. We have suspended one HOD who was colluding with outside people and some councillors on the allegations of fraud. The hearing is sitting sometime this week, and there are two more managers that we are disciplining as well for related fraud and corruption charges. Early the strategy, it focused on short-term projects, as it was said by the previous, is it Northwest? But we are reviewing that structure, and we have established an early forum which is fully representative of the communities at Sandys River. But we are also looking at a master plan, which is not only going to focus on the five-year plan, which is going to look at 20-year plan. Sandys River has a lot of potential, both on agriculture and tourism, and we're saying let's have an integrated master plan that will guide development going forward and focus on issues of land use management. Critical success factor for the turnaround plan. Financial bailout is critical, but also we're doing a reconciliation with the Department of Human Settlements, because we just discovered out of the assessment that there's a lot of funding that they never transferred to Sandys River, and yet we've paid a number of contractors. So that exercise might yield some positive results in terms of money coming in, but that doesn't mean that we don't need the financial bailout. Payment for rates and services is critical, and I must say there is a positive move on that aspect, and our data indigent register is going to assist us in getting a reasonable share of the equitable share. Performance-driven culture should be sustained within the organization. Appointment of competent staff should not be compromised, starting with the and Section 57 managers, because the gains that have been achieved thus far, if we don't appoint competent people, will be reversed. A corrupt-free environment is critical. And then I conclude by saying that the support that is provided by the department, GPSA, and CLACADU should continue up until the intervention is withdrawn. The political support to the administrator must continue, and I must say it has improved quite a great deal, although there will be some tendencies here and there. That's the end of my
presentation. Thank you very much. I hope members are noted. Would allow all to present, because if you could say, last question now.
will say too much on this one. Let's have all of them present in a note. Note them, Kuda, just note them so that they don't forget.
No, thank you very much. The Kokama administrator is going to take you through. I don't think he would be like Sunday River.
I think I allowed Sunday River. I was there. I could see the situation.
Yeah.
Really, we needed them to talk. There's a need for serious support there.
Good morning, the chairperson, members of the committee, the MEC, and the colleagues. I'll try and stick to the written presentation, and then I'll take the questions from the members flowing from the presentation. The table of contents, really, we will be covering the principles and the terms of reference as I was given by the department.
Maybe let me come in because Kokama will know it. If we could just go to successes and challenges, that would be fair.
Yeah. It will be slide number 13. Slide number 13, which deals with some of the achievements the intervention has been able to show in Kokama. You would recall then that when we reported, the country did not even have the rules of order. And there were no rules of order, nor were there any delegation framework that has been done. And what is also a challenging issue in Kokama is the lack attitude.
Any member who feels like thirsty, will just silently go there, assist yourself, and come back.
We also had to introduce an internal audit function with the establishment as well of the audit committee, and you would recall then that the MEC spoke of the SIU reports which the MEC gave to the municipality to attend to. We have addressed all the SIU issues that were contained in the SIU report. And the MEC has been, or the department has been given the municipal responses into how it is intending or is dealing with the SIU recommendation. And also we've taken steps to improve communication with community. And there has been a serious issue with the stakeholders in Kokama to such an extent then that we saw it fit to establish the stakeholders forum which meet on a quarterly basis. We have set plans to manage staff and debt. Most of our staff and the councillors were owing the municipality. We had then to force them to make payment arrangements with the municipality, which they are honoring. Annual financial reports have been compiled. This time around, we're able to submit the annual report to the annual financial statement to the Auditor General in time, unlike last year, because last year's financial statements were submitted this year in January. The process of compiling the annual financial report has been completed. The final record keeping system has been introduced. We have reviewed also and the SCM policies and established SCM structures. We have also attended to the Auditor General's queries, and in that we are being assisted by the Departmental Clean Audit Section. The 2010-2011 budget was approved, we have developed a revenue management and enhancement strategy to that extent, and a debt collection policy. And to that extent, we have issued letters of demand of about 4,730, totaling a debt of about 47.4 million, which we're hoping then that we will be able to record to receive a sizable amount of the 47 million. We have this time around again improved on the asset register, which has been developed, and the auditors are currently auditing that asset register, which we have done. And we have also prepared a draft fraud prevention plan, which the municipality did not have. And also, in terms of cutting the costs, we have introduced various measures, such as the abolition of the when we abolished the overtime, we had to reduce on other overheads, and really this has proved to be one of the best options the municipality needed in a long time. The municipality has already approved a new draft organizational structure, which we have costed, and we will be proceeding with the appointment or the filling of certain critical positions. For an example, the position of the PMU, the position manager, and also the position of the internal person dealing with risk. The appointment of the municipal manager has been achieved. The municipal manager started on the 1st of October this year. And we have also seen the appointment of other two Section 57 managers, manager corporate services and manager community services. Manager technical services is still vacant, as the position of the CFO hangs in the balance, as the CFO was suspended, and the proceedings are still at a stage really of the discipline. We have also introduced a performance management system, and with the performance agreements having been concluded, the MM has already concluded his performance agreement, and one other Section 57 who has started has also signed his. The other Section 57, the corporate services, will be starting on the 1st of November. As we have indicated, then that before we employed the current MM, we had to finalize the outstanding matters of the then MM and other Section 57, which we were able to finalize, and we then had to appoint the new management team. Change management and organizational climate environment in the municipality is one of the issues that needs to be tackled, as we'll be making one of the recommendations that really this remains one of the critical areas where you see that the staff morale is still high and there's a high level of ill discipline at the municipality. And we're saying then we need an external assistance to look into these issues which we've detailed here under. Certain achievements within the technical services have seen that the systems and procedures have been developed to improve the implementation and monitoring of technical projects. You would recall then that there was 177 million rand and a disaster funding made available by the Department of Local Government and Cooperative and Traditional Affairs. And really this grant made it very possible to improve a lot of services in Kokama, for an example, your roads, the houses that were demolished, and really this has made service delivery more visible than before. We have also developed for the first time an indigent register, and we've been able to record about 1,950 beneficiaries, and who will be the recipients of the of the indigent benefits. You would recall then that there was a testing center that was closed in 2008. That center now has been opened, and really it has alleviated a lot of hardship. People have to go to PE, to PLAT, to have their to go and get their licenses and other related services. And we've also been able then to start with the IDP process plan, and we've also been able to start with the process establishing the community-based representative forum. Disaster management plans have been reviewed and up to date, and also there's funding of 177 million, which I referred to earlier on, really has been able to make the municipality and improve a lot of services. Water meters have been installed, and we are in the process of installing more, because you find that there are certain areas without water meters, and really it raises a lot of discrepancies when people are querying their accounts as to why other areas have got water meters, whereas others do not have. One thing then, there are remaining challenges which really the department of and the current staff, together with the local politicians, will have to attend to. I continue to make a point that the discipline of staff in Kogama is one of the critical challenges that would stand to undermine the intervention. You have got many of the junior employees in that municipality who occupy certain political positions, and they, to some extent, I always say to them that they are terrorizing the councillors because they would want to hold the councillors to account after the working hours. So it's a peculiar situation in Kogama which really it needs some form of attention, because you could see that some of the decisions the councillors had to take, you sense that there was a coercion in that staff members would dictate to councillors what kind of decisions need to be taken. We are saying, really, this one, even us as administrators, we have got limited role that we can play, but political parties probably need to have an eye on this one. The other remaining serious challenge refers to the low level of skills of employees. There was a period in Kogama where really the question of requirements for the post were ignored when people were employed, and we are still suffering now from that from those decisions. That number of people that you find at the municipality do not necessarily have the required skill for the job, and you would know then the kind of challenges one would have if you want to get those people out of the system. There are labor-related issues one needs to talk to. The maintenance and development of infrastructure, especially water, and is still below standard. We get a lot of letters from the Department of Water Affairs about the quality of water that is not fit for human consumption. I'm saying it's one of the issues which continue, because you find that, again, the kind of people we allow to man and manage the water treatment plants really have got no clue of what is happening or how they need to do what is required to do. And also, what is also compounding the challenge is the lack of water resources in the Kogama area. You would recall then that there were attempts that were made to secure funding from the national department to deal with the issue of the lack of water in Kogama. Again, we are saying lastly that there has been a political interference in the work of the municipality. Local politicians should strive for a better balance between their oversight role and interference. And the culture of non-payment of services. We are trying to break that culture by introducing the debt collection system and also issuing those red letters, we're calling them the red letters, the letters of demand. And you can see that some of the people are willing to pay for services, but the municipality did not make any attempt to want to recover those monies. Again, lastly, that then there is a need, again, the ongoing need to support this municipality even after the termination of the mandatory intervention period. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. The next one.
This is the presentation about Alfredo. Thank you, Chair.
Mm-hmm. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, this presentation, Honorable MEC, is not going to focus on the past, but merely take where we are, because it's been done before. And I will go straight to the last slides, just to indicate as to where we are. We made a presentation in the past about the intervention in Alfred Nzo, which we have come to a point where we terminated it in November last year. And having terminated it,
sorry,
we
Chair.
Looked...
Chair, sorry. There's two pages that is blank here. We've got that page, but before that page, there's two pages that is blank. We've got the one that you are busy with, but there's two that is blank. In front of them.
Okay. But there's no page, a slide missing. Like if you we can check page 1 and 2 and 3, they follow. It's just the printout mistake. Yeah. In terms of numbering, no slide is missing.
It's an advantage to have more blank pages to write for.
Let me just zoom straight to the achievements and why we took the decision to pull out of that municipality and what we did subsequent to that. We noted that the internal audit, which was one of the issues that was problematic in that municipality, was addressed during the intervention. And a system was developed to ensure that all audit committee resolutions and recommendations were brought to council and for them to be implemented and followed up. The internal audit manager was also appointed during the period of the intervention. We also looked at the competence in the finance department where there was no CFO, and we facilitated the appointment of the CFO, and the CFO is now operating in the municipality. We also looked into the area of the public participation, which was one of the terms of reference, and a draft policy on public participation was developed and adopted by the municipality, and we assisted the two municipalities falling under Alfred Nzo, Matatiel, with the establishment of ward committees, except at that stage ward 20, which has been subsequently addressed. We also looked at the ward governance workshops for Matatiel as well as Umzimvubu for the wards that were identified as being critical in those two municipalities. The issue of the municipal manager was also addressed. The municipal manager was appointed. As I mentioned, the CFO was appointed. The real challenge at the time was around the MIG project and the use of the MIG money for operating expenses. And that was put to an end, and all the MIG projects and funding were subsequently refunded. That is, the money that was identified for MIG projects was refunded so that it is used for its intended purposes. As I mentioned, we then looked at all these factors and the stability in the municipality, and a decision was subsequently taken to end the intervention in November last year. Then we decided on an aftercare mission where we appointed a task team to make a follow-up to the municipality so that all these gains are not reversed. The task team then interacted with the municipality, and out of the needs that were identified by the department was around the records management as well as the workplace skills plan. And an amount of 1 million was made available by the department to the municipality to follow up on these issues and to tie up all other loose ends that were there. Our task team is still interacting with the municipality in terms of Section 154 of the Constitution and no more around 139 in the Constitution. The former administrator of the municipality, Alfred Nzo, has now been shifted to Kogama. He's the one now responsible for Kogama municipality. We pulled him out of Kogama, of Alfred Nzo to Kogama municipality. That is the update now on Section 139 in Alfred Nzo. The question that remains, Honorable MEC, would be, from our side, we need to put closure to the matter. We needed to find out from the committee as to whether we still have to come back and report, or this would now conclude the issue of Kokama, because we need of Alfred Nzo, we need to move on to other municipalities as we have submitted the closeout report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, really. I think the last question needs to be answered before we discuss. I think that matter, as well as the provincial executive has got the authority over it, the legislative part of parliament would have to endorse that. It's not a matter of waiting for green, red light, whatever. All what we need is this process report. Why? Are you satisfied about something? Honorable members, can we now open for debate? You can ask this, there, that, there, whatever, according to your interest. Honorable Nancy, Honorable,
to ask too many questions. For me, I want to say, for instance, I want to talk about these two municipalities. In terms of Alfred, so I'm happy. I support what the conclusion is that we are coming with, that the province have, I mean, to tell us. In fact, we've seen the report, it's clear what's going on. But my main worry is this thing. In fact, I want to ask from the administrator, Sandy River, when we were there, when we were from Hekweni to Tatat, I heard that you were complaining in Sandy's River that you are not given the support that you need by the department or by Tatat. I'm not sure the support that you complained about was this part of the finances that we're talking about here. Or because I've heard you later saying you are comfortable about what you are being given in terms of the support. I'm not sure whether it's this thing of the money. But if it's this thing of the money, what I want to know, what is the role of Tatat in terms of financing? And then, what is the national government doing? What is the provincial government doing? I know that, I mean, I just want to check, because my interest is to make sure that this money is there, as I'm hearing. Because I'm close to everything in fact, I don't know what is going on, so I'm not interested to ask too many questions. My interest is to look into how to take each other forward. That's my first question, and I'm in around this thing of money. Others, I will just leave them, but my main concern, Chairperson, which I need to raise here, both to Kokama I know about Provost Mkoka. I'm afraid here what is being said, and I knew before what is going on. The threat to clean governance in Gagat, the whole Gagat, in fact, not only the whole Gagat, in the country, particularly local government, is the inability by political leaders to distinguish between political intervention and political interference. I think that is our main challenge. Because if I'm wondering, as I'm hearing you are saying, you need to be there in Sandys River till next year, I mean till after the election. My main worry now is that as we're moving towards local government elections, there are many things that are going to come up, political things, that are going to affect these municipalities. Now my interest is to know what role, I know it might not be easy for the department at the Bronx level to stop, I mean, this political interference too much, but what is it that can be done at that level to make sure that, because I think there's a perception that political leaders, local political leaders from whatever level, from whatever party, they've got an oversight role over the political employees, which then from time to time, as they were referring from Kokama, makes them to think that they've got powers. With these powers they are using, not looking to any pieces of legislation, because they don't have authority. Now I'm interested to know, how are we going to manage this as what moving towards local government? Because my fear is that it's not going only to happen there as it is happening there. Already, I've seen it in many places. In Makana, where I'm coming from, whilst we are able maybe to quell on some of other things, but it is coming up from time to time when people feel that they want to know something from the municipality. They just go and ask and they demand for accountability. The issue is, I'm happy about all these things, but there's this question of money there, but then I'm interested to know maybe from the province and to ourselves, to you, Chairperson, how are we going to manage this political interference? Because this is the only threat. What role can we play to ensure that maybe our communities are empowered so that they understand? Because what they do is to kill what is to be done. For instance, if you look in terms of the ward committees, I'm telling you, it will take us years for them to be functional. Because the way that we are establishing them, we do it politically. It's not like we ensure that we promote the participation of the communities in government. It's not what we are doing. And even if it's DA, thank you, Honorable Becker. Even if it's DA controlled municipality, when they establish these committees, they will make sure that those people who are in control there, or that council, must be in control of those members of the ward committee. Not the structures of governance, not the municipality, not the ward council, only the ward council. If the PR councillor doesn't belong there to that political party, they will make sure that that person doesn't have access, even if he or she has access, but is unable, you know, to pull the string so that people can feel that they are part of governance of our communities. I think this is what I want to raise. How are we going to manage this? Because this is the only threat that I can see when it comes to governance in our communities. I'm interested to know maybe from you, I've been planning, I've been thinking, but in terms of what you are saying, the finances, I'm serious, what is it that can, what role can the provincial and national government play so that that municipality gets out of that situation?
Chair, mine is not really questions. I've listened to the reports. I'm quite happy. I wasn't there personally. But this is a question in my mind, and I'm going to ask this committee. We are politicians, and I'm not racist when I'm saying these things. It makes me angry to see that our people must suffer. And we've got the law in our hands, we have made bills where we can say, we have got financial institutions where it's not good for an administrator to come to Parliament and plead assistance, financial assistance, not for her or for him, but for our own people. This is not good. We must put our money where we see people are doing so. I'm so happy that I'm here in this meeting today to hear that the department, the provincial department, has taken out the administrator from Albert Nzor and taken to Kaukama because they've seen his good work. Now, the question that we must ask ourselves, and I don't want Honorable Mayor to ask the question, what can we do? We must use our powers and to the financial institutes of this government that have got billions of money to supply our people, to assist our people where we need money. We can't allow this thing to go on, Chair, and people that are really working, doing their best, must suffer just because of there is no money for them to work with. I mean, Chair, it's high time, and I appreciate what the MEC is doing, and the DDG, and everybody, and the administrators. But, Chair, look, I think it is Kaukama. Kaukama said local, in other words, BECs, I don't care whose political party it is. They want to control, and the people are suffering. We can't allow such situations. Chair, I'm pleading that if we as politicians, as this committee, we must have a joint meeting separately without where these people are taking questions and then taking minutes. It's time for us to act. This thing of every year, the president of this country said 2010 is a year of action. It was only a year of action for the World Cup. The people are still suffering without services, and the World Cup is gone, and the people are suffering. So my plea, I'm not going to ask questions because they give us the reasons what's happening. They are telling us what they have achieved, where they were coming from, what was wrong, what they have rectified. So it's for us as politicians here today not to sit here with our mouths shut and say, Chair, I'm closing with this. I always make an example of this thing. In 1992, before the new government came in 1994, in the Northern Cape, there's the place they call the Kalahari Oos. There was a water pipeline taken out from the Orange River. For less than 100 farmers, more than 193 million rand was spent. Why does it take so long for this government to see to it that these people are in need? We don't need to give them money. We need to service them, make their life better. We overspent 100 million rand. We can't report 30 million rand. What are we doing? We need. It's time, Chair. It's time. I'm serious about this thing. We need to assist our people and the financial institutions to come together and see to it. Lottery's got 4.1 billion. What are they doing with it? IDC's got billions. What are they doing with it? NAS got billions. They enrich individuals. So, Chair, I think I'll speak even to the chairperson of the Finance Committee. I'm also a member of the committee. It's time we must come together so that we can do justice to our people. We can't keep on hearing these things. We can't service giving for money. Look what they've done. If you read this report, they are working hard to get clean audits. They are so honest here, and thank you, MEC, for being honest what is happening in your province. It's a good thing. It's the only way how we can solve these things, when we are honest ourselves, so that we can solve this problem. Honorable Messi, it's your province. Take up this thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. But can I also remind the committee
that the delegation from Eastern Cape made this recommendation that you are taking today. And indeed, we would have to commend the MEC that you have done exactly what we have done in the House, that the MEC would do, if you remember, the first recommendation on Kokama, Alfred, later on Sunday River. These issues, they are sort of touching on exactly what we recommended they must be done. And what we are happy about is that they are very naked. They are saying, now this is a difficulty, what do we do? I think that's one other thing that we need to address somehow. But first, let's get clarity with that notice, because indeed, if there is a plea to Parliament, Parliament cannot go to United Nations. The power lies here. This is the last stop for power. And the budget is controlled by Parliament, is passed by Parliament, and whatever. And therefore, I think the emotional plea of Honorable Kunda must be taken elsewhere. We need to note it and take it further as a committee. And also, even in the House, as we debate the budget of the minister, this is what we must do passionately. And quote Sunday River. And quote what happened Northwest. This, I think that is what would arm us as we debate the budget. But we can't wait for the budget. I think we need to see what contribution we can make, especially in terms of 20 million or more. Maybe as a committee, we can initiate a meeting with the minister, the MEC, the treasury, including the premier. Because somewhere there is money. Somewhere there is money, both of them, national and provincial treasury, and throw this matter to them. Otherwise, we refuse to pass their budget. So I think that one we can pack it there. And I'm sure the Secretariat also noticed that we would meet that type of a meeting. And also that on the 2nd November, there is a workshop of this committee with provincial legislation. This matter must also serve as a point of the, from particular to general. Maybe we can do something. It needs to be noted as I go to deal with the approach. We're going to have a workshop with provincial legislature on Section 139 intervention approaches, so that we are coming with a homogeneous in the whole country. I think it will do something. But then let's go back to basics and maybe get clarity. Maybe before you can answer, let me just comment. The MEC, I think, already has answered the questions, critical questions that we had, especially, I know members of the committee want where there's corruption, they want to know how far we are with the Oxford. But I think the MEC has clarified that the process is there, we'll be receiving the report. We can't keep on hammering on the same thing, that in fact, it was going to be an issue from the committee. I would just want to commend the MEC for taking the bull by its horns. We know when we were at Alfred, we know that was an issue, the issue of prisoners and whatever. So it's with the police. The same with other municipalities. However, I would want, when you respond, really, deal with this issue of accreditation, because the committee recommended. And if it's that context, one is happy, because you are addressing it at Sunday River, where housing looks like it was a major problem, and also the capacity within the municipalities. So if now it's been shifted, just to clarify, to unpack that one. The question of Amadon, we need to look at it very critically, especially because it's a water matter. I really am not sure. I think it shouldn't be something that must be permanent, because in terms of obligation of municipalities, it might in future compromise and you know the boards want to make money, if they are given that free license, we may come back again when people are quarreling about the rates, the charges, whatever. I think service level agreement of some sort need to be highly, you know, watertight, so that as they assist, because there is no solution. It's very important that you must do that. And the issue somewhere is Kogama. The report talks about internal audit function. I'm not sure as to whether there is an internal audit committee or is an internal audit officer or manager, but the function is noted. But what does that mean? Who does that function? If that can be done. This issue of staff discipline is a serious matter. And where in political power is used to sort of control, you know, you counselors are politicians, and then officials later on become your boss, the ANC or whatever party. It must be looked into. My recommendation is that we might not have a solution here. Maybe to say various members of various political parties, if they are affected, if the ANC, we need to take it to the PEC to make a very, very serious intervention with the region. If DA must make sure that it takes it to the leadership and with the region or the branch that are there, it can only be solved there with a serious political intervention by political leaders. Because otherwise, at the level of administrator, there, it might not work. I thought maybe if we can make a recommendation, whoever is connected, let the leadership of the organization take it up, call a very serious workshop around that sub-region, if it's a sub-region, to deal with this matter. It might not be solved in one meeting, but it can gradually minimize. You see, like when we were inside the river, I think the lecture, even though we're on intervention, according to the stability, we have tried to put sense into councillors about what is their role, and I'm happy because there is that improvement now. I think that one can be taken to the organization. The ANC, let it be the ANC, the SACP, alliance meetings of some sort, whatever. I think that can assist. The other issue, I think, most of the issues that are critical are really the MEC has thought of, because we recommended this thing of cases, forensic, that, whatever, and this thing like that. We just hope that that are the cases are cases. You don't deal with cases like you are going to a public participation. They have a legal route, all sorts of things. But let's hope that some of the funds will be recovered, others won't be recovered. I think where funds cannot be recovered, somebody must go to jail. So that it serves as a deterrent to those who are remaining. If one or two could get killed, even if it's 1 month, it's a sign, then it will serve as a deterrent. Basically, really, the way I've seen, especially Sunday River, I think there's major progress. There's major progress. Other than getting that fund, there's major. It was tough. It was not easy. It was tough that Sunday we were, but we would want to commend to say keep the work and continue to do the right thing. This issue of taking the administrator from Alfred Nzo to Kukama, I think we welcome it. Because we raised the issue of dual responsibility of Mr. Louis Tipa. But yeah, I think it has the address of that because it was causing problems of some sort. Personally, I'm not sure whether the committee, I think we have to welcome it, but it solved the very same issue that we raised. And if that, maybe we can just iron out some of the questions. And to me, it's that. You can just answer those that need clarity. And then if there are follow ups, you can make follow ups. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. There are three issues that have been requested to clarify. One is the complaint I had at the time. I think the Chair will agree with me, was purely on finance. At two levels, the financial bailout, and number two, the facilitation of a meeting between Department of Human Settlements, Provincial Treasury, local government, and ourselves to do the reconciliation that I spoke to earlier on, which has subsequently proved that, in fact, even the Department of Human Settlements is owing us a lot of money. And that process, through the intervention of the department again, I think has yielded some good results. So it was purely on finance. Accreditation, Chair, before any municipality assumes a developer status, there are certain prerequisites that we must meet. And mainly they are around having a fully functional housing unit. And as I indicated earlier on that we only have one person that is running housing. And also the reason for the intervention mainly was around corruption on housing-related issues. I mean, we didn't have any systems, the authorization of projects, everything was completely wrong. Now, to a point where there was an agreement between the Department of Human Settlements and Sandys River that they are going to revert the status of being a developer to the department until our house is in order. That situation is still prevailing. Once we have a fully functional department, we have systems in place, the developer status may be reapplied for. So we're no longer accredited. However, that doesn't absolve us from doing overall project coordination of all housing projects, including issues of social facilitation and beneficiary administration. But procurement, appointment of consultants, that's out of our authority. Then the third aspect, I fully agree with you on Amadola Water Board. It will be done on a service level agreement with specific deliverables as to what is it that they have to do.
Now, follow up. Kuta, are you satisfied? Berger, are you fine? Oh, I've got my
Sorry, with regard to the issue of the internal audit function at the municipality, this function was performed, it was a shared function. And I think the view we took as a municipality was that even that shared function was not assisting the situation. Hence, we felt then that let us create a unit within the new organizational structure of the municipality, so that this function could be performed internally. Obviously, if there is more support needed, we can bring in support, but not to totally outsource it as it was the case before. We have also established an audit committee. Even the audit committee was a shared function. Again, the point we're making is that maybe some of these challenges that are besetting the municipality is as a result of these functions that are shared, and you find then that some of the municipalities like us are forgotten when issues are being discussed at this shared service forum. So the view we're taking is that let's have this structure internally, and if we need more support, then that the municipality can get professionals to assist in this kind of process.
Even at Sandys River, it's a view that we're taking that the problems that are prevailing within the municipalities under SACADO, they differ from one municipality to the other. Now, if you have a shared services, they don't give you full attention. They can only provide that support up to a certain extent. As a result, the view that we're taking is that we're going to get an intern that will appoint and absorb on a permanent basis, but that intern must work closely with the internal auditors so that by the time they pull out, there is skill that has been built within the institution. But I think it's a general problem that we're even raising at the district forum, that the internal, the shared services approach doesn't work for all municipalities.
No, it's just to say, I think they have dealt with some questions relating to the areas of their operation. Only, I think, somewhere in the presentation, Sandys River and to a certain extent Gogam, there's an issue of basic services like water and electricity. What we have done after having exposed to how the province, I remember in the first meeting, but I think in one interaction with the chairperson, there was an understanding here nationally that we are not doing good as a province in terms of providing those basic services. I think in the rankings nationally, we're number 8 in the provision of sanitation and so on and water. Now, we then went back to say, why are we in that position? We then interacted with the national departments, water affairs, energy, and what came out is that municipalities in our province are either under-reporting or not reporting. And that has since been confirmed by some of them because we interact with districts, because the function is located. The second issue is the capacity that was enjoyed by a district as water service authority is no longer there. But the function remains there, and the local municipalities are frustrated by the fact that the pressure is on them. Why this service is not being provided? For instance, if you go to OR Tambo, you will get villages that stay 3 weeks without a drop of water. Now, but the district municipality is the second highest funded in terms of the municipal infrastructure grant in the country. Hence, we were saying in the MINMEC, maybe there is a need either to commission the Auditor General, you see, to assess as to what the MIG has been doing since its introduction, 2003. Was it really helping the people, or what was this money going to? Why are we still in the same predicament, yet financially, after financially, there is money directed at districts as water services authorities to address the issue of sanitation, to address the issue of water. But in the same areas where the district, the money is allocated, you will get various protests. People say, we don't have water, we don't have this. And in some cases, what we have discovered, Honorable Chair, is that there is no alignment between what human settlement, now the function of sanitation is now moving to human settlement. There is no alignment between what the human settlement is doing and what the MIG is doing at district municipal level. For an example, you will get, Honorable Nessie, a household with 3 toilets, because the human settlement would come and bring a house and provide a toilet. And then you go water affairs, put in a toilet, and you get the district municipality already has got a toilet. And in the, when you look at the quality of those toilets, they differ in accordance with those departments that we're putting them. So we were then saying, it's something that we must discuss. And therefore, there is a pending summit on basic services in the province that is being prepared, so that all of us have an understanding as to why must we be so slow, and why, what can we do to improve reporting? What can we do to improve even spending money on these services so that our people are not getting a roti. The second point is we have submitted a memorandum to EXCO, which was referred back because they said we must consult Professor Treasure, which was our witness, of 2.5 million for Sandys River to take Sandys River up until the next new council comes in. And I think by tomorrow it's going to be entertained by EXCO as part of supporting that municipality. The third point we would like to, one of the lessons that we have learned in the intervention was that we intervene and say we are going to be responsible for the following areas. And when we are already there, we inherit a lot of issues that the municipality is unable to pay, and they become a burden of the intervention. Now, we were then saying, let's have a discussion in the department and perhaps inform EXCO that when we do any intervention through Section 139, we must make an intensive investigation as to what are the issues so that we make a complete package financially that of what we are going to do when we intervene. So we take a complete responsibility of that municipality and all the financial implications that goes with that. And in that way, we think that we will not be in this business of saying, no, there is something, ESCOM is saying this. When we thought that, no, that ought to be the responsibility of the municipality, but the municipality financial muscle is weak, and therefore ESCOM threatens and so on. So these are some of the discussions based on our lesson. Political intervention and interference. Honorable Nancy, it's escalating now. If you look at the period, say last year, and compared with this year, the more we think about stopping it, the more it escalates. And it is accompanied by the question of discipline, political discipline. Because people don't even listen to their political parties these days. And that has a negative impact on the functioning of a municipality. You see, if you take, for instance, what you could have read, Buffalo City, they just come into a meeting, the very same meeting that ought to take decisions that will impact on the lives of the people is disrupted so that it doesn't take those decisions. It doesn't conclude its business. How do you deal with that? Even if you intend to introduce the issue of code of conduct, you will be accused of siding with one other faction that seems to be wanting to take this direction exactly in the way you want to intervene. Now you must then be advised by a political party whose representatives are doing that thing. On what should you do? In some cases in the province, municipalities are resolving on some of the conduct of the councillor, and they then refer the matter to the MEC. And when you look at the situation, I mean, this individual ought not to be there. If he, she behaves the way the report is covered by an investigation, but you can't then say simply, I approve that he be dismissed. The next phase, the political party comes back. Why are you dismissing our people there? These are some of the kind of things that must be, I think the NGC you are referring to, if it is to be implemented the way it was resolved, we can go a long way. But if it remains in paper, I can tell you now, look at Metro now. The same issue was raised by Honorable Ness is what is confronting Nelson Mandela today. I mean, I asked the CFO yesterday, but why there is a Treasury Core Portfolio Committee there? Why it failed to pick up that you have a crisis? Said, no, we were told that we must not present this report to a multi-party committee. And I asked myself, Aibu. That structure ought to be overseeing the function of the Treasury Department in the Nelson Mandela. And it ought to have picked up the trends coming so that there is intervention. There is intervention in terms of saying province must come in or national treasury must assist us so that we don't reach the stage where we are now. So I'm therefore saying that this issue is now escalating. It's no longer an issue too much in Kogama. In Kogama, it's just that it is done by the people that are not matured politically. They just, in the same way the olden days, just getting into an institution and ransack everything. You see. So I'm saying even there, we intend to visit that municipality so that we address those workers. We address those people who are now implicated in that, so that we support the newly appointed administrators. Otherwise, generally, we are doing everything in our power to support these municipalities. But our the disappointment we get is that it sometimes appears that the people don't appreciate that there is assistance which is being provided. And some of the people in the municipality don't even understand that there is a problem, why there should be a provincial support. Those are the kinds of things that we are going through, but nevertheless, we are attending to them as vigorous as possible. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, very Honorable MEC. I think that concludes our meeting. However, I would like to request the MEC on the extension of the administrative visit at Sunday River, because the committee was there, just to write the committee a letter, because procedurally we needed to express as you as a committee in terms of that process. A letter that would take to the House to endorse that, to avoid coming, what that type of thing. So I think we are adjourning, and we want to thank delegation and honorable MEC, honorable members for your time. It even went beyond one. We're not supposed to do that because we don't have catering. We have a strict parliamentary financial control. It's unlike at municipal level. Once you eat a snack, it's over for a day. But I want to thank everyone. I want to thank also Fargas. Yeah. I want to thank everyone who managed to come out. I want to say thank you, Bon Voyage. You are doing well. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Members of the committee, could you remain for 5 minutes? Yeah. Let me just announce if you're coming. I think from here you will deal with it. Oh, by the way, you what I'll do, maybe one of you will go to, Poet, can you check just whether Tao is present in his office? Check. Section 139, subsection 1, 1445 or Section 139 of Municipal Finance Management Act. Remember, we have two Section 139. But of the Chief Whip called me to her office to her surprise boss. That